Our legal team from the department, our visitors, our state law advisor, and the parliamentary advisor, you are all welcome. We are continuing with the Refugees Amendment Bill. There were issues that were left last time for the department to work further on them. I'm sure we all have received the input. Could I give over to the department to take us through? I'm not sure who's going to lead us. Okay. If you could please introduce yourself, because you always attend, but I think I forgot the your name and the portfolio you're holding in the department. Over to you, sir.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson, Honorable Members, colleagues, good morning. My name is Mr. Mudiri Matthews. My normal position is Chief Director Inspector within Immigration Services, but I'm here as the Acting Deputy Director General, who is currently on leave. I have with me the Legal Services team from Department of Home Affairs, Mr. Dionne Rasmus, Chief Director, DAT Civil Nature, Director Drafting, and then colleagues from the refugee offices as well. The documents, I think all members should have a document titled Further Clarification to Questions Raised by the Portfolio Committee on 2nd November 2010 relating to the Refugee Amendment Bill 2010. With the Chairperson's permission, if I may proceed to take you through the issues raised. The clause in Bill under 2, the issue raised was exclusion of persons from obtaining asylum due to certain offences committed in countries of origin, which if committed in RSA would be punishable by imprisonment. A further clarification is that the intention is not to use the provision as an open door to refoulement. However, to ensure that persons who commit serious crimes such as murders are not allowed to flee the law into the Republic to claim protection on that basis by using the asylum process to avoid removal or to face the consequences of the act of the serious offence. Upon reconsideration, the department is of the view that a qualification should be inserted in the provision to ensure that this will apply to only those who would get a sentence that is without an option of a fine. The proposed amendment is therefore to add the words without the option of a fine after the words imprisonment on page 3, line 26 of the bill. The second issue raised is the composition of the Status Determination Committee. As indicated, the intention is to have the Director General establishing the Status Determination Committee in the manner to be provided for in the regulations to be made under the Act. In this regard, the Department will ensure that before the finalization of the regulations and approval thereof by the Minister, the committee is provided with the draft regulations for comment on and input. The composition of the committee will be in a manner that ensures that persons with various skills and knowledge in the refugee matters are appointed. The committee is not a statutory body, but an administrative structure to efficiently improve the status determination process. There's no proposed amendment on the composition of the Status Determination Committee. On the issue raised relating to deletion of provision disqualifying a political office bearer from appointment to the Refugee Appeals Authority, the department is of the view that the definition of a political office bearer or clarification as to which political office bearers are disqualified should be inserted in the provision. The proposed amendment is to amend Section 8EF to add the words holding a position in the National Executive Committee of any political party after the words office bearer. Under Issue 8, automatic review of manifestly unfounded decisions, the Department would like to reiterate that the process of automatic review is procedural and see no need to make it obligatory for the applicant to make representations. The Act currently empowers the DG to, before reaching a decision, request any person to provide information or to make further inquiries into the matter or request the applicant to provide any information requested. It is important to differentiate between the principles applicable to the review process and appeals in the context of the Act, and in this regard, the Department wishes to indicate that the automatic review process for those decisions which indicate that the application for asylum is not within the ambit of the provisions of Section 3. In conducting the review, the DG will be looking into the factors such as the reasons advanced by the applicant for asylum, bearing in mind the provisions of Section 3 of the Act and the procedure followed in the adjudication process, bearing in mind the provisions of Section 24 of the Act and any other factors relevant to the application that the DG may deem necessary to arrive at a decision. Honourable Chairperson, those are the further clarifications from the Department. Thank you.
Thank you, Chief Director. Members, those are the concerns that were left for the Department to re-look at. Are there any maybe further questions, because they were further clarified and further refined? Honourable Lovemore, followed by Honourable Marcella.
Thank you very much, Chair, and thank you to the Department for hearing and making the changes that they have made. Chair, I'd just like to clarify one or two things. In terms of the regulations, it's most unusual for regulations to come back to a committee, I think, so I certainly am very appreciative of the commitment that we have in writing that those regulations will indeed be brought to this committee for input. I'm referring to this document, the response by the Department, the bigger document, the previous one that we had. On page 25 of that document, reference is made in the notes by the Department to submissions, and this was with respect to unaccompanied children. Reference is made there to regulations. It says in this provision, reference is made to the Children's Act 2005, sets out the procedure for dealing with children. The regulations will be made under this provision, or to be made under this provision. I'm not sure if these are Home Affairs regulations, or if they are regulations to be made under the Children's Act by a different department. But if we could just get clarity with respect to that. Chair, the automatic review of manifestly unfounded decisions was a big issue for many of us as members, and certainly many of the people who made submissions the week before last. And I just think we need to understand this more. Saying that the process of automatic review is procedural, I understand that, and I think all of us do. It's the procedure that is followed. But an appeal, how does that differ from an appeal? Is an appeal not also procedural? I mean, how does that differ? How does that an appeal allow for submissions and the automatic review not? Chair, I have another question, but may I come back to it?
Honourable Marcella.
activist and best to take notes. Thank you very much. Good morning to the officials. What I best needed to know, of course, is the fact that some of the issues that we spoke about has been taken from one, the issue of the imprisonment contained in section 4 of the Act, and in fact in this case is section clause 2 of the Act, 2B, where an individual would be denied the refugee status on the basis of a financial crime on imprisonment. Now, what I like here is the further, you know, definition where you add without the option of a fine. So then it does bring some relief on the kind of fears that one has. But again, it's a point that we have to make very clear that you don't need to, you know, prejudice one without giving them a fair try. I mean, a fair opportunity to present themselves for the process. I must say though that, you know, this process of submission by the party, it seems that it has become a norm, that it's a mere submission by people. But when you look at the actual consideration of those submissions, it does not reflect that the department does in fact take seriously those submissions. I know that might be a very general statement, and sometimes it seems otherwise. But I think it is important that some of these things and comments are made and you know, submissions are given. We don't simply come here as a committee and make even some of the submissions that we're making as members of the Postal Committee. But you shouldn't get that kind of an attitude that no, this is not important. No, this is really has been taken care of one way or the other. And that brings me to what we dealt with in the citizenship and also in the past and that. That we have to be taken seriously as members of the Postal Committee. And we put so much work and effort to trying to make things easier for the committee to operate. So when we brief the department on our feelings and fears, it's not because we think that the work that they have put was not thought of. It might have been, in fact, it has been one of the greatest things that we appreciate. The effort, the work that they put in drafting this document. But some submissions and advice that we put across the department should be taken seriously in the finalization of the document. So that we don't have a situation where everything goes there to the NPOP. I mean, when it gets there, they bring so many amendments to us, and they will ask us, but where were you? You are members, but where were you? What were you busy doing at the time when you were considering this document? So many have been said. So much, in fact, has been said. And I think we have an opportunity, we have been given that opportunity, but some have been considered. It does leave some room of uncertainty on my side.
Thank you, Honourable Member. Honourable Bali Mjela.
Thank you very much, Chair. just a little bit of a detour from the Honourable Mangasela. Otherwise, I agree with you. But I just have that belief, and I hope we have the belief that we give a chance to people who have presented this to us and see how they will then bring this together again. So we are very happy with the presentations that have been made. We are aware that this is now the third time that the department is coming forward to really try and meet us halfway. So we are happy with clause 2, clause 3, clause 4. And I also want to say I agree with the Honorable Lovemore, just to say on the regulations. We know it is not our right to demand them, but it would be an honor if we could get them. Otherwise, we are very grateful to the department for the efforts they have done.
Over to you,
Thank you very much, Chairperson, Honorable Members. I want to start out by saying thank you very much for the kind comments. We really appreciate it from the department side. If I turn to Honorable Lovemore's questions, yes, it will indeed be our regulations, the regulations that we will be making. We will set out the process, how the children, unaccompanied children, needs to be attended to, etc. It will appear in our regulations. With regard to the question of automatic review versus appeal, if I could just go a bit back, if we look at the definition, and I just want to explain why this automatic review and where it comes from. Previously, you had the Standing Committee for Refugee Affairs that reviewed your manifestly unfounded, abusive, and fraudulent applications. Now, what that means is that it's an application that does not meet the requirements of Section 3 of the Act. If you look at the definition currently of manifestly unfounded, it indicates that manifestly unfounded application means an application for asylum made on grounds other than those contemplated in Section 3 of the Act. So you would find people we want to come and work in South Africa. Clearly, that's not an asylum application. So what you would do, that's a manifestly unfounded application that's submitted, and that's basically where the DG then goes, and he reviews that specific. There's an automatic review to the DG in this regard. If we can maybe just mention what Section 3 says. It says the following: subject to Chapter 3, a person qualifies for refugee status for the purposes of this Act if that person, A, owing to a well-founded fear of being persecuted by reason of his or her race, tribe, religion, nationality, etc. It mentions a whole lot of areas. So if it doesn't fall within these categories, it's manifestly unfounded, and that's where the automatic review comes in. And remember, we're doing away with the Standing Committee for Refugee Affairs. Is no longer there because that function has been taken over by the department. You've got an asylum seeker management a section now within the department that will deal with the issues that were previously dealt with by the Standing Committee for Refugee Affairs. On the appeal, obviously appeal deals with the merits. So obviously if that would be your unfounded applications, but it's an application that complies with Section 3, but you found it to be unfounded because of A, B, C, there are reasons. And that can be taken on appeal then basically the Refugee Appeals Authority. I think those were the questions. The others were mere comments. As I said, thank you very much once again from the department side. We really appreciate it. Thanks, Chairperson.
Not of the love, no. I'm sure this is the last question.
Chair, this is such an important piece of legislation. I'm sure you're not going to curtail my questioning. Chair, I hear what the department has to say about the automatic review. My concern, and I'm sure the concern of those who made submissions in this regard, is having visited law clinics who deal specifically with refugees, I hear all the time about the poor decision making of status determination officers. Now, I understand that they're going to be replaced by status determination committees. If they have the same level of country information that they are currently exposed to, it's not going to be much better. The fact is that your appeals authority, your appeals board at the moment, is having to start looking at cases from the beginning. They know those. They are having to do that because of the poor decision making by the status determination officers. Now, that decision making comes into deciding that a person's application is manifestly unfounded. They decide that application is manifestly unfounded. It might well be as poor a decision as one that results in an appeal. It then goes for automatic review, which is considered to be procedural, and there's absolutely no right of appeal against that at all. So it really is, and I mean, I think you will admit the inefficiencies at the gate, at the starting point for the asylum seeker, that really need to be addressed through the review of what are poor decisions and giving people an opportunity. One of the things that hasn't been addressed is the Refugee Appeals Authority. It was we've now been told that there will be regulations that will set out the structure of the status determination committees, and that we will be privy to those before they are finalised. But the Refugee Appeals Authority Minister, Deputy Minister Gigaba, has said that that will be decentralised, that it will hasten the process of dealing with the massive backlog of appeals, etc. There is absolutely no detail on that, and how will that be addressed, and will this committee be part also of that?
Before you discuss that, were you saying we need to have that in the act?
No, not necessarily. I do, and although this is a statutory body, the Refugee Appeals Authority is a statutory body, so perhaps the reasoning by the department for not having the Refugee Status Determination Committee, for not having the details on that in the Act, is because it is not a statutory body. The Refugee Appeals Authority, however, is a statutory body. As I say, a lot has been said about it on the news. We certainly haven't been privy to that information. It's been said by ex-Deputy Minister Gigaba. So I think we deserve some information on that and how we plan to take that forward. And Chair, the last question, I'm referring here to page, I don't know what it is, clause 9. This is in terms of permanent residence. I share the concern, and I'm sure a number of us do, of the people who made the representation lawyer for human rights and the law society in this case, that permanent residence will be granted from the date on which the person, or should be granted, from the date on which the person lodged application for asylum. This was discussed last week. Mr. Jackie McKay said that we do not legislate for inefficiency. I fully understand that. However, when we have, as I said last week, when we have a situation where it is taking between 5 and 7 years to process an application for refugee status, so by the time somebody is successful, they have lived here for 5 to 7 years. Then they have to live here for another 5 years before they can apply for permanent residence. We are legislating for the inefficiency, not of the applicant. And I fully understand that. You don't legislate for the inefficiency of the public. But you have to surely take into account how long, practically, it is taking the department to process those applications. So to say we don't legislate for inefficiency, not to come back and address that at all in the response, I do not think is fair to the human rights of those of the applicants, and I believe that we deserve a response. Thank you, Chair.
Honourable, Advocate Erasmus, but before you respond, can we discuss this issue of status determination officer and the status determination committee? I thought the committee went to assume the responsibilities that were done by the officer. Am I right? That's it. So, Honourable Nagmule, let's not go back.
No, Chair, that is absolutely correct.
Can we give an advocate to respond?
Sorry, Chair. Could I just go through? I think just to try and address the issue of the unfounded and manifestly unfounded, I think if it's a case of poor decision making, that would be within the realms of an unfounded decision. Manifestly unfounded would be quite, generally it is it's clear cut that the person would just not qualify at all. And I think it would be a case where the information given is very clearly a situation where someone says, no, I'm not facing persecution, it is really, I would like a job, or I don't have, I want to support a family. Now that wouldn't fall within the realms of the Convention or the Refugee Act, and that would be a clear-cut, manifestly unfounded, as opposed to where a poor decision-making, where an appeal would need to say, to look at whether the decision is a safe decision, that would make it an unfounded decision. So I think that there is a poor decision-making in terms of a manifestly unfounded decision. I think the two, we can separate the two, because it would, if poor decisions, they will fall within the unfounded appeal process. Thank you.
Thank you and good morning. I would like to just get clarity on some questions that my colleagues would also help me. With regard to the country information, I think my colleague from Asylum Seeker Management will also add up that we have established a directorate that is going to help with the kind of conducting research and analyzing the information that will be circulated to all offices in relation to what will be happening in particular countries at that moment. So that is part of what we are going to be doing administratively. If I'm not mistaken, there are already advertisements that have gone out or been published for people to apply. Then the other issue with regard to manifest unfounded, I think it has been explained a little bit. But then coming to the Refugee Appeals Authority, the 2008 Amendment Act already covers the details about how that body should be functioning, and it is an independent body, and they have got the power to make their own rules that should be in line with the Act. So how they will be functioning will be in their own rules that they themselves will be making, not the department. And then perhaps maybe just going further, for example, with regard to the decentralization, currently the way they function, they are called Refugee Appeals Board, and their composition says they must decide as a board. But unfortunately, they've been deciding cases individually, which then raises a question in law, and we've given a legal opinion as a department. We followed up with justice. They confirmed that they are rendering their decisions liable to challenge if they decide not as a board but individual. Then in correcting that, we had meetings with them in 2006 when we were doing the amendments coming to 2008. Then the agreement was, we will be able to, I think we need to come up with a provision which is in the Amendment Act, is Section 8C2. That says the board, that authority will be composed as this under B, but then when it comes into doing their functions, determining appeals, it will be determined, that an appeal will be determined by such number of members of the Refugee Appeals Authority as the chairperson may deem necessary. So the chairperson will be able to say, these are the kind of numbers that will deal with particular cases. Then the idea was, you will establish decentralized. Each and every office will have members who will be deciding cases flowing from that office, so that they don't get to the central body the way it is that they sit as the authority altogether, the way they should be composed. Then that they agreed also that it will allow an easier flow and a faster way of determining appeals. Then there was one provider that at least one member among those that are appointed or that will be determining the appeal should be qualified. So then in 3 it says the Refugee Appeals Authority may determine its own procedure and make its own rules, which may not be in conflict with the provisions of this Act. And we believe in those rules, that's where the actual procedure will be dealt with. And about hearing cases de novo, that is just unacceptable in terms of if someone comes on appeal, the appeal should be based on the reasons for the decision flowing from the RSDO currently. Then, if anyone, there's a provision also in the Amendment Act that says if anyone comes with material information that completely throws the case out of picture from what was before the RSDO, the Refugees Appeals Authority must
refer back the matter for reconsideration, because the RSDO never had that information at all. So hearing a case de novo, it's like assuming the authority of the RSDO. Then I think that's where we had problems with the board, and we engaged with them in that when we even came up with this kind of a provision in the 2008 amendment. Then with regard to the issue of permanent residence, I think we, well, in the last week I was not there, but at the that it was never, it never came up as an issue that required further clarification, as I discussed with colleagues. But I think they'll be able to clarify also. Then, but what we are also saying is, I think there are two processes in relation to one being a refugee and permanent resident, which are in separate acts, and we didn't want to sort of conflate issues in a particular decision. So we wanted to leave issues of permanent residence in the Immigration Act itself, and citizenship issues also be dealt with separately. So, and with regard to the inefficiencies, I think I believe we have improved much more since the 2008 amendments, although not yet in operation, in the way in which cases have been dealt with. And I think maybe my colleague will confirm, there will be less cases where you'll get a person being 7 years in the country, unless the 7 years was made impractical and was made to be because of the actions of the applicant. And we have got in the 2008 amendment a clause that says, if a person applies for asylum, we give you a date, come on this day, come for a hearing, and you don't come on that day, you are going to be given a period of about 3 months that your case will be automatically abandoned, deemed abandoned, unless you come with a reason that says, I was hospitalized for the entire period of the 3 months. So we are dealing with those cases where, as a department, we experience problems of people who are nowhere to be found for us to be able to get an interview and be able to adjudicate further. So there are factors on both the department perhaps and also the applicants themselves in relation to the number of years that could be taken. But I think recently we have been able to determine some cases even for or within a day or so. Or for example, those which are just clearly manifest and founded. Then I think those are the issues that I wanted to just give an input on. Thank you.
That's the clarification from the department. Do we have, are we okay, or do we still want to pursue the matter further? And please let us also come up with a solution as well. Honorable Lavin.
Thank you, Chair. I'm afraid I'm just not hearing anything that is convincing. The gentleman says that some cases are dealt with within a day. Those might be the manifestly unfounded, as you quite rightly say. They certainly are not the people who go from asylum seeker permits to refugee status. That's not done in a day. It is taking between 5 and 7 years. Now, what is the problem in changing the wording? What is the problem? Because a person who, as I understand it, a person who receives refugee status then has to apply to be a refugee indefinitely, then has to apply for a work permit and or permanent residence. So it's still a long process after that. Becomes eligible, but still has to go through that application process. What is the problem in changing the date? Or in making from the day that person applied for asylum? There isn't one. There's no convincing argument that has been supplied at all, Chair.
Can we deal with that one? Are you saying a person applying for asylum should be granted whatever permit immediately?
No, Chair. A person applying for asylum gets granted an asylum seeker permit. From the time that, and they would hope to become one day a refugee. Between applying for asylum and being given the piece of paper that says that they are now classified as a refugee and they may now look at permanent residence, etc., that is taking between 5 and 7 years.
But it's a process.
It is a process. But now what we want to do is, in order to then grant them permanent residence, we want to add another 5 years why do we not just say from the time that they first applied for asylum, that is the time when we consider their stay in South Africa? Because once they've been considered a refugee, once they have been determined to be a refugee, 5 or 7 years down the line, they then are open to enter the immigration stream, so they can then apply for permanent residence. So it becomes, it's not in terms of the Refugees Act anymore, it's in terms of the Immigration Act, but they go into a totally different stream. It might also take a while. It is all a process. They still have to go to all the checks and balances, etc. So I just don't understand the problem. Why not make it backdated to the day they applied?
But I'm sure it's a process, because you first apply as an asylum seeker to a refugee, from refugee, temporary permit, temporary resident, and then from there to whatever. But this person is a refugee. He or she is entitled to a travel document. He is entitled to a work permit. So what's the fuss? Honorable
Chair, the problem
okay,
is...
Okay, I haven't recognized you. Honorable Matthew,
okay.
I need you.
Thank you, Chairperson. Mine is just a comment from Honorable Mazel. When he mentioned that probably as a committee, we don't take the input as a D. I don't know whether I have problems. And another question of these three bills. We had the citizen death and death and refugee bill, which we don't go anywhere about. Apparently, the role of the committee is to regulate and the rules and the legislation of this country. That is my understanding. And they complement each other. Also, the lawyers of government as much as the committee. I don't think we'll get in some because we are getting the last term of the 2010 now, and we don't even have one bill being passed. So can we just come with mechanism and solution? That's my requirement. Thank you, Chairperson.
Honorable, you'll follow Comrade and Honorable Madonna Peterson, followed by Honorable Lasma.
Chairperson, I'm sure we've raised a number of issues, and the department has responded to some of the questions posed. But I was listening very attentively to the attorney of the department. When the gentleman mentioned that last week was not a big deal, I'm sure when he got the report, it was not made or flagged as one of the key issues which the committee raised. Now it raises another point which I've made earlier, that we raise issues here, we make points and quite emphatically so, as robust as we may be trying to make our point clear. But I think it's not in the manner in which we say these things, but it is also within the context, in the context in which some of these issues are raised. The reason why we flagged this as an issue was because we're looking at, and I also made Mr. McKay very clear that look, these issues have become, you know, a norm in the department. And it was not an anomaly for myself, as if someone has never mentioned it before. It has been mentioned repeatedly that there are challenges, and sometimes the imbroglio here is not whether people understand the system, the departmental officials at the senior level. No, people are doing their work. They are doing them within the community. the statutory framework that I agree. But the only problem is that the system was flawed. Hence, we had so many appeals sitting at the appeals board, about 26,000 of them at the appeals board. Now, what it then says to us is that, well, there are inefficiencies, but how do you then deal with the inefficiencies in the system? But then we're saying, okay, probably if we somehow make it, you know, because there's no recourse in the system for those who are coming as asylum, who are seeking refuge. So if you want to address the human rights issue, which was raised last week by myself, that you then include this as one of the requirements that, look, if you have been on the system, you've been waiting for not necessarily 7 years or how many years, but then recognizing the waiting factor. So that then becomes part of the period that the person will use when he or she takes the application. So it was a point that we thought it would be giving, you know, a record on the person who has been waiting for a refugee status. Mm-hmm. And I think the person you will remember, when we're dealing with the citizenship amendment is, this again was a major issue which I raised. In fact, which we raised as a committee somehow, saying that how do we then deal with these issues? And yeah, Mr. McKay said then. In fact, I think the department, the civil services, Mr. McKay said no. Even the director general said no. Let's wait when we deal with the refugees later in the year. Now we are dealing with the refugees. And then you are telling us that no. Let's wait and see we deal with the immigration. So I'm saying, how long should we wait to deal with the issues? Because by referring them to the next deal or to the next leg of the department, then we're not dealing with the issue. Because we keep on, you know, passing it to the next level. What we should be doing, I suggest, is to recognize that this is a challenge. But when Mr. McKay says, and I'm very much uncomfortable that he is not sitting here and Mr. Matthews says to take the blame, I'm sure he will take the bullet, Mr. Matthews, as we are saying, as we are facing this submission. But we had said to him, or he had said to the committee last week that, well, the way in which we legislate should not be that we legislate for inefficiency. I think that was a bit insensitive on the fact that there are people are suffering as a result of inefficiency. Now, you don't have to take that lightly. But again, we had agreed that, look, let us talk about this matter further today. Now, today, there's nothing further about the matter. It's simply to say, we have noted it and then we're moving on. Hence, I'm not happy, Sebastian. Because I think we could just add some fuel. And then Ms. Matebe, Honorable Matebe, would be also happy that we can pass one of these bills this year. Just by doing this, saying that the refugee should be, the waiting period for the refugee, for the asylum seeker to be granted the refugee status should be taken cognizance when applying for permanent residence. And if it must be in writing, certainly, I'm sure. We can put, in fact, I can try and put it down and the members can assist me. But we're trying to assist now. So is that impractical? I would like to hear from the department officials. Is that impractical or is it making it a lot difficult to implement this law?
That person, I didn't want really to speak, but that person, I just want to say the department really has responded in all the issues. Why go back? Because the chairperson has said it, let's come up with solutions. Because we keep on going back, chairperson. We're going to end up getting confused ourselves. Thank you, chairperson.
Thank you, Chair. And by no means I'm trying to hold up the process. I'm trying to come up with a solution, and that is change the wording. Change the wording. Chair, just on a point of explanation and clarity, if somebody is part of the refugee process, their refugee is and has been declared a refugee, that refugee status can be lifted at any time. If our government decides that, for instance, and let's take Zimbabwe as an example, that Zimbabwe is no longer a threat to Zimbabweans, our government can actually lift the refugee status of people who have been given that status, and those people can then be deported back to their country. Once they and everybody is entitled to security, to some sort of security in their lives, surely. But once they are part of the immigration stream, they do have some level of security. If they want to ultimately become permanent residents in South Africa, that's an entirely different matter. But once you're a refugee, you have constant insecurity. So there's a very, very big difference. So as I say, we are all coming with solutions. We are saying change the wording. Make it from the date of application for asylum. Thank you, Chair.
Well, thanks, Honorable Chair. Firstly, let me apologize for arriving late. I'm joining the discussion from a very late point of view, but I assume that the discussion is centered around the issues that we debated in the last meeting. But first, let me start by saying, if you apply for a driver's license and you are given, what do you call it? A temporary. You do not have a license. You'll only have a license once you go to a proper test and pass and be offered an official driver's license, which may be renewable really after 5 years or so. Now, I don't know why we want to create things which, in my view, they don't make sense. I mean, I don't know why we're debating about people. We are not chasing them away. We are keeping them here. We are processing their documents. But until such time that the processes have been completed, there can no way that we can say now, once we conclude the process, therefore, it's sort of dated backwards. Retrospectively, no. Really, I believe the argument that we have, in my view, is illogical. It doesn't make sense at all. So my view is the position that was presented last week, I think it's a fairly reasonable position. And I don't know where are we learning our experiences from. Are we establishing our own new standards? Because you go to any country, there's no way that you can go there today and they give you some status 3 years later and say it's retrospective. Unless if we are provided with clear proof that we are basing our argument on this particular factor. So my view here is that what the committee presented last week is correct. And secondly, the position made by the committee last week that legislation is not supposed to be based on inefficiency, I support that position because I think it's fair, it's correct. Your legislation must actually help you to drive towards being efficient. But if you legislate on the basis of your weaknesses, you're going to remain weak forever.
I'm not sure this advocate is major.
Thank you, Chair. My name is CSC Sevele Mesh. My difficulty is a bit difficult. I know my friend is. I think maybe perhaps if we go back to understanding or just saying appreciating what is the Refugees Act all about. If I come into the country, apply today, then I know I'm going to get permanent residence. Are we really having a refugee then? So I think that's where I think we need to maybe start from. That's my understanding, that if I'm saying I'm claiming for asylum, and the country says, no, come into the country. If you spend 3 years, we give you direct permanent residence. I think we're not differentiating between immigration matters and that falls under true immigration. And
Chair, this is misleading. Point of order. This is absolutely misleading. Point of order. Nobody said anything about applying for asylum and knowing you are going to get permanent residence. The gentleman is twisting the words in order to mislead our interpretation of it.
Can we give him a chance to continue?
I'm sorry if I appear to be misleading or twisting, but I was just trying to, that's how I understand it, to say, for example, I'm looking at the draft of the Lawyers for Human Rights. It says there's a proposal to say we add the words from the date on which he or she lodged the application. I think that clearly, for me, it says once you lodge an application, you are looking not as being a refugee, but then you become into being a permanent resident. Because if today I apply, I get granted refugee status today, then it automatically qualifies me to be someone else. So I think there are those things, and I think perhaps that's how I understand it, unless my colleagues can say I'm also not understanding it clearly. Because I think we need to have a process where, and a good example of a driver's license, you are a learner, you get through all the processes, and until such time, and the inefficiencies that I think, I try to give an example that there are those cases that we found that you don't get to finalize the case because of the applicant. And that's where you'll get, and previously what we used to have also is you'll get a person who comes, applies, is rejected because the system wasn't integrated. Then this, you know, they keep on recycling, and with the that was called the xenophobic attacks previously, I think it was 2008 or so. There were people that were found that, you know, they've been long in the country, the department has been sort of looking for them to finalize their cases, but they were unfortunately not coming forward. So I think that's my view, and if I appear to be twisting the interpretation, I apologize for that. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson. I think we just to maybe give assistance there is to look at the process of applying for refugee status as a temporary process, whereby what we want to do at a certain point is review whether the safety of the country for the applicant has improved. Because the person has actually come on the basis that they are here because of persecution, and really they would not be here if it wasn't the case that there was a persecution issue. And I think maybe to try and understand it in that sense, and then the permanent residence issues, okay, if there's a prolonging of a situation. But we are viewing it as a person looking for protection whilst the country is not safe for them.
Okay, can we maybe then now invite the state law advisor? We'll be followed by Advocate Jenkins. Over to you.
Chairperson, I just want to give the interpretation of this section, Section 27, and we're going to see the intention behind it. If you look at Section 27, it deals with the protections and general rights of refugees. And it says, I'm going to go exactly to the point that we're facing now. A refugee is entitled to a permanent residence in terms of Section 27D of the Immigration Act after 5 years of continuous residence in the Republic from the date on which he or she was granted asylum. So if you look at this provision, from my side, from the interpretation of this section, one would think the intention behind was to make the person a refugee after you've been granted the refugee. After you've been granted the asylum, you must remain in the Republic. You must have that continuous, you know, residence in the Republic. You can't move around from South Africa, you go back to your country, you can't move around. You must remain in the Republic in order for you to get that recognition as a permanent resident. After you've stayed, after you've granted your permit, and then you stayed in the Republic for 5 years, then you qualify for the permanent residence. So I think that's the way I could interpret this section, and I think that was the intention behind it.
So from the date when you receive your asylum, I mean, it cannot make sense. It can't be a good interpretation to say from the date that I've applied, then my recognition will start take effect from that date. Because then I was applying for the asylum, not knowing even if it was going to be granted. And then I think it's correct to say, after it has been granted, from the date that asylum status was granted, then you must remain in the Republic for 5 years at least, in order for you to get the permanent residence. And so we are still struggling. Thank you.
that is if we put something in the clause, so you must keep that into consideration. I read it as there's two hurdles you must still cross before you even get to consideration. One of those hurdles is, have you been in the country continuously for 5 years? And I assume that means you can't visit someone outside the country in some place. I think that's what there is to do. And the second one, have you been declared a refugee indefinitely? So if one puts that word in here, I don't think you're going to make it easier to get over those hurdles. From an administrator's point of view, the administrator's going to receive an application saying, you haven't been a refugee, a declared refugee for 5 years. You understand what I'm saying? So it's a difficult one. Either one must decide from both from the committee and the department, let's change the regime of getting permanent residence. But I don't think stop that on that point will work. And perhaps, I don't know, maybe the department knows already what the situation in other jurisdictions when it comes to granting permanent residence. Otherwise, we can have a look at it and advise it.
Thank you, Advocate. I think we have exhausted the issues that were flagged last time. I'm not sure if we still want to go on, but I thought Section 27 of the 1998 Act addresses the rights of refugees. They are completely covered there. So I'm not sure if maybe we need to further engage on that. Advocate Erasmus.
Thanks, Chairperson. Just to add, if it's about the protection of refugees and asylum seekers, and I understand where Honourable Lovemore is coming from, but if you look at this Act 33 of 2008, and you look at, it's Section 21 of that, that's the main Section 27, which deals with your protection and general rights of your refugees. If you go to the next page, your Section 22 deals with the protection and general rights of asylum seekers as well. So they do indeed have protection for the period which they're on the asylum seeker permit, etc. That is indeed included in the Act. So if it's about the protection, that is there. It's already covered for because it wasn't there previously. And that's specifically why we put that in. We are aware of the human rights and things like that. And that's why, if you look at specifically Section 22, and which amends Section 27A(d), the rights contained in the Constitution of the Republic of South Africa, it's specifically included there, rights that accrue to asylum seekers as well. So my view is that rights of asylum seekers as well as refugees have been taken care of in the specific piece of legislation. Because you have to read them in tandem, the 2010 amendment together with the 2008 Act as well. And the idea of the department is, yes, we still stand, you don't legislate for inefficiencies. We're trying to get to a point where you get away from the inefficiencies, and you don't want to legislate to get rid of the inefficiencies. Let's put it, you have to work on your systems and procedures in this regard, and those are procedural matters, administrative matters. It shouldn't come in legislation. Thanks, Chairperson.
Thank you, Advocate. Advocate Sid.
Thank you. I just wanted to add that while doing the amendments, we did some research in respect of what other countries are doing. For example, even on the committee, we've got some information on other legislation. I think we are in line with what other countries are doing in terms of what we're offering in the Refugees Act. So it's not like we didn't do that research. We did. We continuously will be doing that, and especially like I mentioned, that there's going to be a section that is going to be also doing a directorate that is going to also be doing country information. They'll also be looking at what other countries are doing, so that we continuously improve. Thank you.
Thank you, members. I'm sure we've come to the end of our deliberation, and we are going to have another meeting next week where we're going to continue with the Refugee Amendment Bill and vote on the bill. On that note, the meeting is adjourned.